So I get asked a lot, being in my 40s, how do I manage to continue to perform all season long at the level that I do? Well, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but I have a lot of help. Triple Threat Performance has been putting this old body back together again for years. I keep tearing it down, and they keep putting me back together. And now, apart from the physical therapy side, I got involved in their athletic training program. And honestly, I don't think the Mountains stand a chance this season. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you're interested in upping your game, check them out at www.ttpaz.com. That's ttpaz.com. Now let's roll into the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're doing a little storytelling session with Tim Burnett, who's the solo hunter himself. What's going on, man?
One of the solo hunters, yeah.
One of the solo hunters. The
original.
I guess the originator of Solo Hunter TV, definitely not the original solo hunter.
No, that's for sure.
Was it Mike Mitten wrote a book years and years and years ago on solo hunting, and Tom Miranda does a pile of it. I mean, it definitely wasn't the first on the scene, that's for sure.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm sure solo hunting has been around since the dawn of time, but
yeah. I think I'm the first one that really brought it to the public's eye, I guess.
You're the one that made it cool.
I think Remy's the one that made it cool. I'm just the one that made it so that Remy could show us how it's cool.
Okay, there you go. I'll accept that.
Yeah, I'll accept that.
But me and solo hunting, we don't go so well together. You know what it is? One, I'm a big wuss, so I freak myself out really easily when I'm by myself. But I like somebody there to go, hey, did you see that? Are you seeing what I'm seeing? Like, I don't know. Like, I guess hunting for me as a kid was about being with family and friends. And, like, that's a big part of it for me. I like to have at least one person with me. I mean, I don't want, like, an entourage, but, you know.
I want an entourage as soon as the animal hits the ground.
Then it makes it nice to have an entourage, especially if it's an elk.
I'm obviously... I really like the solo thing. Like I enjoy spending a lot of time alone. I'll see a hero picture or something with five or six guys. I'm like, dang, how many guys does it take to kill that thing? But
right.
You know, it's just a totally different mindset of what I've kind of thrown myself into. But this last year, I mean, I said, screw it. I scheduled a bunch of hunts with friends. I hunted with Remy for the first time since 2012. You know, I just said, screw the solo thing. I'm going to go hunt with all my buddies and family and enjoy this season. So it'll be interesting to see what the public perception of this season of Solo Hunter is.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
For me, I mean, screw it. They'll enjoy it. They'll love it. I do like there's days that I love to go out by myself. And I really like doing coyote hunting by myself. One, because I'm so much more successful when it's just me and my bow and a call. But I like whitetail hunting by myself too, because, you know, it's just got up in a tree stand, you're just kind of whatever. But when it comes to like spot and stalk stuff, I'd much rather have a partner. Much rather have somebody hit, like, hey, you know, you seen that, whatever, check this out. How big do you think this guy is? Whatever, you know, something to bounce off of.
There's kind of two levels of it. You know, there's hunting by yourself is like, it's awesome. There's nothing better than hunting by yourself during the day. And then you go back and hang out with your buddy at night or whatever else. It's the problem is when you start trying to film it by yourself, that's when it goes from, you know, a level of enjoyment to a level of suck. But the problem is like, to what I do, I can't show a solo hunt unless you're solo, you know?
But, right.
So the filming part of it, if you could get rid of the filming part of it, the solo hunting aspect of it would be amazing. But
yeah, self-filming, I can't stand self-filming, man. I did it a lot early on, like early 2000s, 2003, 2004. And I got fairly good at it. You know, of course, the production quality back then wasn't, you know, stuck my mini DV tape in my
Yeah,
3C
exactly.
CD camera and I, you know, did my thing. But,
4 o'clock in the afternoon, you run out of light, you know.
exactly, you know, but, yeah, nowadays, man, I couldn't.
It's, you
I'm
know,
too focused on the hunt, and I keep like screwing shit up. Like I don't.
that's selfish, man. It's selfish. You just focus on the hunt.
I'm not thinking of everybody else.
You know, it's kind of it's I guess it's the part of it that I don't know. If you're gonna show it to anybody, you almost have to. I mean, you almost have to film it in one way or another. If you're doing it for a public reason, I guess if I wasn't doing solo hunter, you know, for the public, then no sense. I would never drag a camera around. The camera would come out occasionally, but rarely would I put a hunt in jeopardy, you know, or success of a kill in jeopardy because of the cameras. And honestly, I'm kind of getting to that point now where it's like, yeah, maybe I'll tell the whole story, wrap the whole story around and everything, but when it comes time to make it happen, strap a point of view camera to your head and just go. But
I mean, how
problem I
many
have with that is it
times does
shows
the camera cost you?
you know, a lot.
I bet.
Every hunt it seems like, or every season, but it doesn't have to. I mean, there's been times where you just lay it in the dirt and go, and you may not get the animal either way, you know. So it's just kind of the more experiences that I have, the more of those opportunities turn into success, I guess. But there's the ones that you don't see are the ones that didn't work out.
Course.
It's a whole different game when you're trying to produce something behind, you know. It just makes it entirely different, and it's a level of enjoyment in and of itself too, because you can bring it back and share it. And obviously, I like to be able to share it with the people that like what we do, and I almost feel like I owe it to everyone. You know, they've kind of followed us for so many years now, and I feel like our viewers have become a part of what we are, of what Solo Hunter is, and I almost feel like I'm letting everybody down when I don't get something that's truly authentic as a solo hunt, you know. Or like I'm was talking to my wife this morning about the Mexico hunt that I did with Remy and his brother and all of his buddies, and it was an amazing time. But I was like, man, the hunt's just, it's not a solo hunt, it's not this. And she's like, who cares? What does it matter? But I feel like I'm kind of letting the true hardcore, my base, you know, the base of solo hunters down at a certain point. And I know that I'm not, but it's just kind of.
Well, I mean, you kind of created a little bit of a cult. I see guys driving around and hashtagging that they're solo hunters all the time. So,
Again, I blame Remy for that.
it's
No.
all his fault.
It's cool. That was kind of the thing to begin with, because when Solo Hunter started, there was a group of guys, a lot of different faces and people involved, and I wanted to create a community and build a community because I don't feel like I'm a flashy guy. I'm not an alpha. I'm not a leading character. And I realized really quick that when I tried to be that, I wasn't very good at it. So I wanted more people involved, and I think that's what's really cool to me, and satisfying, is the number of people that share the same passion. That from my appearance, I look out at Instagram or whatever else, and I'm like, those guys feel a part of it. I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted, is people to actually feel like they can associate with a group of like-minded, self-sufficient individuals, you know. So it makes me super, super proud to be a part of it.
And you should be. That's awesome. I mean, when you create something that you know is bigger than you, it's always fulfilling, I think, you know.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Well, cool. I have you on today to share with us you know, maybe your most memorable hunt or a hunt that maybe taught you something that you kind of changed the way you hunt now or.
Yeah. I think really the biggest thing that affects the way that I hunt now, it really have to it was kind of the benefit of the cameras, you know. By by just involving cameras into the hunting process as the cameraman and the hunter, mm-hmm. like it changed the way that I hunted immensely. Before, I was super aggressive. I mean, I just fight or flight. You'd see an elk or a deer somewhere, and you just go. You know, you check the wind real quick, and you make a plan, and you go up around the ridge, and you just do your thing. And I had some success with that, you know, but a lot of times my youth and aggression would just get me into in there before maybe the animal was ready, you know, like on an early season mule deer hunt. Maybe I was getting there before the deer wanted to get to his bed, and right before they go to bed, that's when their ears kind of perk up. They get out of that little bit of lazy mode, and they start really checking things out. Their senses go up, and mm-hmm. so I kind of botched that. But the cameras, what that did is it slows me down. By trying to tell the story as we do, as the hunt is unfolding, like filming it and documenting what we're seeing and what we're doing and the entire process, it slows you down by two or three times. So mm-hmm. I'll look at a situation, I'll be like, there's no way I'm going to get to a buck fast enough to catch him as he's going into his bed and film it too. So I'm just going to document it, take my time, watch him go into his bed, make sure that that's where he's going to stay for the day. Maybe go back to camp, grab a bite to eat or something, quick siesta, and then head up the mountain and make a play for the afternoon. That whole time, that gives me the amount of time that I need as a producer to film the hiking shots, film all the things that makes the show complete.
Right.
And it's still in the process. It's not like I'm going out and recreating anything. It's like I'm just taking the time to produce that.
Right.
And sometimes that bites you. You know, this year in Utah, I kind of did that, and I got down on a buck at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Lightning and rain come over and just beat the crap out of me, and I remember I was texting, I think it was texting Remy or my brother Boyd, and then it started, the sun goes down, and I'm just thinking, oh, this buck's going to stand up anytime. This is going to be sweet because the sagebrush is super tall, the wind was perfect, like I was positioned just slightly above him. I mean, the lighting was awesome, had the cameras all set, just waiting for this thing to stand up. And he never did. It got right before dark. I'm like, I wonder if that son of a bitch is even in there, you know?
Right.
So I got up and I figured, well, screw it, it's too dark now, I can't kill him now anyway. And I just kind of beat brush through there. Sure enough, he wasn't there. He must have moved 6 hours before when I was off dinking around, you know. So.
Oh God.
and the unfortunate thing was I dropped a bunch of elevation. I don't know. I am horrible with distances and elevations and time, and so I rarely throw out numbers. But you know, it was probably somewhere in 1,000-1,500 feet elevation drop, and then I had to turn around and go right back up. You know, in the dark and. The whole time,
thanks.
Just like, yeah, that was fun, I guess.
To learn something, right?
Yeah, you learn something, you know. I mean, don't take your eyes off them, that's for dang sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I have such a hard time doing that. Like, if I see a buck, and I put a buck, especially if I put it to bed, I can't go back to camp and eat. I can't, I'm going after this deer. Like, I lose my freaking mind if I, like, I don't have, for a guy that loves to hunt and patience being like one of the main things a hunter should have, I have zero.
Passive aggressive.
Zero.
Sometimes I'm patient to a fault, you know, like I said before, it's almost to the fault of laziness. But it depends. I mean, if it's a deer that like really gets the crank going, there's no way I'm stopping. There's no way I'm going to, you know, take my eyes off it. But I typically tend to be it's a nice buck, I'm going to go after it. And, you know, the excitement level doesn't really hit. Very, very few times do I actually come across a deer or hunt down a deer that is something that really cranks me. And that's my own fault too, for maybe not hunting as hard as I need to or as long. But that's just, I do it that way because I like to be able to keep the consistency, and I just like flexibility and freedom, you know.
Yeah.
I hate putting pressure on myself too much because I've done that, and that's when the weight goes up and the stress level hits too high. You know?
Oh yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, there's a lot. when you got to produce a show, you know, you have to make X amount of episodes.
Right.
There's already a pressure there, whether you're putting it on yourself or not. It's already kind of there a little bit. Yeah. So don't make it worse than it has to be.
Well, and I'm only doing 4, 5, or 6 humps a year anyway, just because there's other things that I like to do and, you know, the business side of it that needs to be taken care of. But so I really tend to put a lot of, or have put a lot of pressure on myself on certain hunts. And sometimes those are the hunts that turn out poorly, you know.
But yeah.
I don't know. It's a blast. I'm glad to be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you're very well respected in the industry, and you know, guys look up to you, and you get to do what you like to do, and you know.
Maybe that's because I'm getting older in the industry, so there's more people that have to look up to me because I'm their elder, I guess. I had a guy tell me the other day, he's like, "Man, you and Remy just seem ageless." You know, it's like you guys just don't age. I don't feel that way, that's for sure.
Oh no, shit, right? God, yeah. I'll tell you what. We had our third child. He's 2 years old now, and up until I had him, I felt pretty damn young, and now. The last couple of years, yeah. Having another kid and having a kid that young, you know, that young and being in my 40s, like it has, it's in some instances, it's made me feel younger, but like it's taken a toll on my body, you know, lack of sleep, the whole, it's beat me up a little bit, man. I felt it. I lost a lot of hair in the last few years.
My thing is mentally, like I feel as young as ever. I feel the same. I don't know. And even physically to a point, like I don't feel like I'm at the same level as some of my friends, you know, that are running multi-million dollar businesses, or they're executives at the companies here, or they're, you know, tenured lawyers or whatever they are, like they're professionals. And I'm sitting here feeling like, I'm like, man, I am just a kid. I'm just out here still just dinking around, you know? Like, I don't feel like I've hit that level of maturity that maybe I should have hit. But as far as like feeling old, I don't feel old at all. I just feel like I've been doing it for a dang long time. Feels like a long time.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that is because like I put a lot of pressure on myself to always do my best. And like, I want to always, I'm not afraid to change things up and do things different. And I'm like, I want to do something different with solo hunter. I want to make it, you know, more exciting. I want to do this. I want to do that. And so, and when you go out on a hunt, like you're telling the same stories, you know. And I was joking with Remy the other day because he did this Rubicon Trail thing, and we've got deadlines trying to get these episodes knocked out, and I need his voiceover and everything. And he's like, "Yeah, just go back a couple of years and rob some voiceover from one of the mule deer hunts from before. Nobody will know."
Like, almost the truth right there.
That is so stinking true. We could probably do that. There'd be some people that would catch us on it though, but you just feel like there's a level of redundancy there where you can only do the same thing for so long, and I want to make it so exciting and so different each time, and that gets to be hard sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's kind of one of the reasons why I got away from my web show. I stopped producing them in 2016 after 13 years of doing it. And a lot of it, most of it had to do with the business side of it. I honestly couldn't bring myself to go out there and find sponsorship and do that. I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do it. I freaking dreaded that every damn year. I hate the business end of that model, but it's just, but then part of it just got to the fact it's like I'm tired of having to, like, I still love being creative, don't get me wrong. And that's why I'm like, I'll do a film or two a year or whatever, and that'll kind of satisfy the need to do that. I'll still try to film every hunt that I can, and any hunt that I can afford to bring a cameraman, or if I can do it myself, I'll do it. But it's kind of like what you said. It's like you don't want to feel like you're doing the same thing over and over again. And I mean, a lot of it I changed up by just doing a lot of different hunts in different places and just kind of switching up the destination. But you kind of fall into a rut. Like I went to Wyoming like 4 years in a row, and you know, California now is going to be my fifth year in a row. Well, California is because I haven't got a freaking blacktail yet. I keep screwing it up somehow.
Yeah,
but,
right?
But no, I get what you're saying, man.
Now you got to keep it fresh. And I think for me, and maybe, you know, get your opinion on this too, but I feel like there is such a thing from a content provider standpoint as you can do too much. Like you can put yourself out there too much. You can push too hard. You can try to release those films, you know, all the time. And it gets to the point where the reward versus work, it isn't there, you know. Some people are very, very successful with these weekly blogs or vlogs or daily vlogs or whatever that format. Mm-hmm. For me personally, that wears me out. Just the pace of Instagram wears me out, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So when I feel like if I can take more time and put more effort into limiting my content and putting it out there, I'm happy with that content, you know, and I feel like I'm not wearing people out with it, because I get worn out with certain content providers only because my mind can't keep up with the pace, you know, and
I hear what you're saying.
There's just too much of a good thing. You know, I'd rather see some of these people maybe package it and then deliver it and give it to us in a little better format. I think that's just my personal opinion. And that's something that Remy and I have had in common, and that we've tried to do with Solar, is not release content, but release it in the right time, the right way, and a certain amount of it, so that we don't burn ourselves out or burn the viewership out.
Right. Well, I know what I've done with myself. I've done just about everything. I mean, I'm going into my 19th year of, you know, being a content provider and being quote unquote in the industry.
Being an influencer before an influencer was a thing.
Exactly. You know, but writing or whatever. And I still do just about everything. I mean, I write for a couple magazines here and there. I do my own blog. I do the film. I got the podcast. Like I said, up until 2016, I had the show. I run like five different websites. It's so much. And I feel like, because the old school thought process on the way the internet worked and SEO and all that stuff was, you got to cast the big net, you know, throw out as much content as possible so that it all gets pointed back to one spot. So when I had that mindset for so long, and that, like, I'm really now, I'm just kind of starting to I'm trying to dial everything back, because I'm like, dude, how much time you spend over here? And how much time you spend over here? This doesn't do anything for you. This doesn't do anything for you. I mean, yeah, maybe more people find out about me, but at this point, I really don't give a shit. It's like, you know, I mean, I don't have the sponsorships that I need to satisfy, which I did before. So that in itself has taken a lot of pressure off, but at the same time, you know, you don't make as much money or whatever, and it's hard to produce content when you're not making money doing it. But
my opinion is the key to success in the hunting industry is longevity and being able to prove that you're there for the long term. You know, when I first started, I took a look. You take a look at mainstream media, and you take a look at the hunting media and hunting television. And at the time, you could look back and you could say, wow, there's guys that are out there that now have shows going for 20 years.
You know? Right.
Or they have a DVD series that's been now going for 20 years. There really is no, or at that time, there was no shelf life on the hunting industry and hunting content. As long as you can produce a show and continue to get sponsorships to pay for the airtime and sell ad space and all that type of thing, there was no limit to the number of years that you could run that course. Right. And so that's the direction I took. I'm like, I'm going the TV route. I'm going to market myself to companies and brands so that I can sell advertising, so I can buy airspace. I'm going to keep my costs low. So I'm going to film my own hunts and all this kind of thing. And I think now it's kind of changing to where you're seeing a lot of flash in the pans. You're seeing people come out and ram hard. But they really haven't taken a look at the long picture of saying, well, can I keep up this pace for 20 years, you know, or for 5 years or for 10 years? And that's where I think people kind of make a mistake. My approach has always been just slow, repetitive consistency. It wasn't like you say, where you just took everything and just tried to flood it as fast as you could and do as many different things. Mm-hmm. It was, this year is, you know, I'm going to establish myself on television. 3 years down the road, then I'm going to start to trickle things out, you know, digitally or whatever else. And what I did is I started all those things at that time. So I started my YouTube channel in 97. I started my website and my blog, and I started putting some of the shows out on Hunt Vids and different areas while I was using the TV show to build that platform.
Right.
So as time changed and people's appetite for linear television changed more to the digital model, I was already set up and established. Mm-hmm. And so now you look at trickling out over the last 13, 14 years, I've been able to position Solo Hunter and some of my assets in almost every digital space that there is out there and actually build all of them and have a pretty solid presence. Whereas now you're starting to see people trying to reach out and latch on to those
right
things.
Right. That's funny. I actually started in the digital model, you know, on the online stuff. And people are like, why are you backing out now when everything's going that way? And I'm
I just
I've been doing it so long, man. I just can't do it anymore.
Well, right. I think in your case, you know, maybe it's a matter of taking a look at all of your skill set and your assets and what you've done over the years and say, what do I like to do best? You know, what gets me out of bed in the morning? Is it the podcast? Is it the blog? Is it the website? Is it the writing for others? What is it? And you pick a couple of those and just put all your efforts into that direction. Because I think at the end, that's when, you know, you're going to be compensated. You're going to be compensated the most for the things that you do best.
Right. Right. Yeah. And honestly, I kind of did that. I'm doing that now, really. Like, I enjoy running my blog and I really enjoy the podcast. Although I might dial it back, because right now I'm doing not two a week. I do one every 4 days, basically, which is about two a week.
Tell you what, if you could interview Remy and me in the same day and guys like that, heck, well, you get all this energy boost, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing that I like about the podcast. I mean, I have a podcast.
Right.
Yes, but it's more a matter of, I heard Joe Rogan say it the other day or something. He said people feed him, or people are fuel, or something like that. So when you have good, positive people and good, positive conversation, like, it really does feed you. And I remember you and I connected 6 months ago, a year ago, or whatever, when we were going to do a podcast. And I was like, John, I got to be honest.
Yeah.
My mind is not where it needs to be. I am not going to be the guest that you want me to be, you know.
Right.
I'm burned out on this. I'm just down on myself. And then a couple other podcasters came along and I was like, I'm feeling pretty good this week. And so I did some podcasts and I'm like, man, it seems like every time I open my mouth, I get myself into trouble or I say something stupid. And a lot of it has to do with where your mind's at, you know?
Yeah.
But when you get good quality people around you and you can have that level of consistent positivity, like, that's when you really can feed and start doing things that are important and doing things of value. So to me, that's where the podcast, in your case, should drive a lot of energy if you're picking the right people, you know?
Yeah, and I feel, I see that for sure. Like, I feel the podcast for me, it's interactive. It's not just me telling a story, you know, one-sided, basically, you know, and like my fan base sends in questions. Like, I feel like kind of like, you know, when we were talking about how, you know, Solo Hunter is a community, I feel like there's like a community around it where the TV show, not so much. I mean, I had fans, but it was different. It was different. And I still love it. Don't get me wrong, I love it. I still love it. I love being in front of the camera. You know, I'm a glitzy glam guy. So, but
as I can see this much of your face. You know, that's all I can see is this.
You know what? I changed his monitor, and this freaking thing up here doesn't like it.
Now I'm not talking to just the antelope head. I'm talking
Well, I don't want you to see my messy-ass office anyway. You can see shit scattered all over my couch behind me.
That's why I asked you to swear. I'm like, are we recording this video for us? I got to clean my office, man. It was
Man.
I had guns and bows and crap strung out everywhere.
I took a guy coyote hunting this morning. I had a client. And, you know, I just came home and just dumped everything over there. And I don't know if you see those legs sticking up out of the – that's my desert
sheep. Oh, yeah.
That's my desert sheep laying on the couch that I haven't had a chance to put back up since I painted my house. I just got this stuff back up in here in my office. And I, matter of fact, yesterday I went and bought a new ladder so I can put my elk back up on the wall in the other room. And so I got to do that today later. But it's
I wanted to say something. You mentioned the community, you know, what you've built around it. Like TV, with just a TV show, it's hard to build a community because the TV show, who's it about? It's about John Stallone. It's about Tim Burnett or Remy Warren, you know, in a lot of those cases. What we did with Solo Hunter was a little bit different, where we actually involved the Solo Nation and people within the television show itself until that became not really that practical. But then we also, you know, built a lot of things online with sharing their videos. And it was just the pride factor of seeing someone send you a video link and then we put it on our platform and they reach 10, 20, 15,000 views, you know, in a short amount of time. Like that really gives you a lot of satisfaction.
Oh yeah.
This year we're getting ready to do a rebrand or a relaunch of the Solo Nation to where they're now, the platforms have now been built for us to really be able to promote and push the Solo Nation and other filmmakers and other solo hunters. So getting ready to re-release the Solo Nation. Calling it the film, Solo Nation film and TV series, because I feel like now that I've invested in the platforms and have everything built, we can really give people a launching pad to get themselves seen and get themselves out there.
Nice. I'll have to film a couple solo hunts and send them to you.
There you go. Yeah, there's no limitations. There's no professional category or whatever else.
I would hardly call myself a professional. I'm a shitty camera operator.
You know what? Turns out a guy can make a living being a shitty cameraman, you know?
Yeah.
That's one thing I think that is attributed to my ability to keep Solo Hunter going is the fact of, you know, low overhead. Not low goals, but I think achievable goals, and not getting too ahead of myself and wanting to always have the latest camera equipment and go on the biggest, baddest, and most expensive hunts. You know, it's keeping it exactly how it would be if I wasn't doing it for a business. It's keeping the hunting aspect of it exactly how I would if I was a dentist or a lawyer or running a carpet store, you know. And that level of practicality has enabled me to get into debt and to not really get into trouble.
Right.
But the community and the growth of it and everything has also enabled me to monetize it, you know, whether it's the brand or whether it's sponsors that see a value in what we do. And you know, so I'm just really appreciative to have done it that way. Because you look at what some people spend per episode and it's just,
oh my God.
I'm like, there is no way. Without a rich uncle or a big brand behind you, that's even possible.
Yeah. No, I've had several conversations with guys in the industry, and I'm not going to mention who right now, but I was having a conversation with a really close friend of mine, and he told me how much per episode he was spending. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, I'm like, listen, I'll film the hunt for you.
Yes.
I'll edit it for you. And you give me half that amount.
I'll produce it for half it. Yeah,
exactly. I'm like, I produced a show for freaking on, you know, a bag of balls and, you know, and some chewing gum for God knows how long.
Some of those producers, they're good. I got a buddy, Jason Miller. I don't know what he's doing now. He used to do a bunch of stuff for Tom Miranda and ESPN and anybody and everybody. And Man, the amount of money that those guys would get per episode or to go film a hunt or something is like, golly, that's insane. But good on them to be able to have that skill set to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah. I shot myself in the foot. So when I had Chevy as a sponsor, and I produced a commercial for them, and I showed them the commercial, and they were like, I found out later that the couple commercials that they had that were very, like, they were similar production value, similar style from different people in the industry. They were charged like $120,000 for it. For a 60 second. That, I mean, and that was cheap. And there was like, oh yeah, like our normal Chevy commercial costs us, you know, half $100,000.
Easy, yeah, $200,000.
Yeah, $500,000 bucks for a regular, yeah. You know. And I'm like,
you know, there's,
I'm like, I sold you that commercial for $5,000.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm like, that's just, that's
enough. Sometimes you wonder if you just raise your prices, if you'd actually get it.
Yeah, maybe.
We used to do, I used to have a pretty healthy production company where we were, I don't know how many DVDs a year, producing other TV shows, and just a stressful pain in the ass headache that I had for 4 or 5 years there. You know, there were some clients that you just, they weren't going to be happy unless you charge them $20,000, you know, for something that you would ordinarily charge $4,000 or $5,000.
Right.
And that's just kind of the nature of it. I know some other influencers in the industry. I mean, $100,000 for a film was not out of the question. But I think all that is changing. You know, for the production companies that can get that, that's awesome. I have no ill feelings or disrespect for someone that can actually command that. It's awesome. So, but at the same time. You know, I think the numbers of brands that can actually afford that or that are willing to spend that nowadays because of the reach that they can get very organically with social is kind of trimming down a bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, social media has kind of effed this the TV industry business model up quite a bit, in my opinion.
It's definitely added to it. It's made it different for sure. You know, on one hand, it's amazing to be able to have these free platforms to build your brand or to build your presence. And on the other hand, you know, it's difficult as someone that has made a living at it for so many years under the old format where companies had to pay you because you had expenses and different things. That's been a little bit of a difficult transition, but, you know, for the savvy of figuring it out, you know, there's a lot of people that are becoming successful because of it. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I mean, those guys are not just guys.
I mean,
guys,
to have
gals,
free,
everybody that
free
are,
platforms like Facebook and Instagram to be able to reach just potentially millions of people for nothing.
Right.
I mean, that's just a brand's marketing dream.
You know? I think YouTube's like, and I've been like you, I've been YouTubing since since its inception, really.
Yeah.
But, like, to me, you know, the guys that only have YouTube and make a living, feed their families off of it, I mean, like, I don't know, the Hushin guys, for instance, or something like that, you know, somebody that's got millions and millions of views or whatever
mm-hmm.
on a consistent basis, I think that's... If that's I can incredible. Choose now where I would be if I was just going to, if I could just make, you know, one clip or whatever a week and put it on YouTube and feed my family, that would be my.
Not me, man. No way in hell. No way. And I'll tell you why. It's because you don't own you. You don't own your content. You might think you own it when it's on YouTube.
Yeah,
but you talk to people now, and from what I'm experiencing, that like YouTube is throttling the hell out of anything gun related, anything
rifle related.
Views are decreasing. There's nothing in the world to stop YouTube or Facebook or Instagram from flipping the switch and just saying, "Don't need you." You know, we got 95. We got all these millions and millions of users.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need you 900,000 or a million hunter users. We just don't want that on your platform. Click, you're done. You know,
you're right.
Same thing with television. There's nothing that says Comcast or Dish or Direct or anybody. It just says, yeah, no more of that. you're done. And that's why I've invested so heavily in my own platform, the apps, you know, the website, and even the brand, because there's so many different aspects of what I've got that I feel like if somebody flips the switch, whether it's a sponsor not sponsoring or going out or digital going out, that me as a business can survive.
Right.
I don't think I would ever want to be a single platform provider.
No. I was oversimplifying it, but I was just saying, but yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
No, that's the point I wanted to make anyway. So you actually led me right into it. So
Nice.
Well, you hear talk and you see people and they're famous on Instagram. And no, pretty much the majority of people that are successful on Instagram were successful prior to that, you know,
right.
Just that platform just launched easy for them.
Yeah, no, get it.
Unless you're a baby in a bikini.
That's it does make it a little bit easier.
it's a funny thing. I guess at the end of the day, you have to be happy with what you're doing and happy with what you're getting. And if you're not, change it. Do something different. Figure it out. I get a lot. I think a lot of that comes down to the relatability that people have with Solo Hunter and the association that they feel with the Solo Nation. I get a lot of questions of people asking about how to get in the industry or how would I start if I had to start now. You know, a lot of college kids are just trying to figure things out, and there's a ton of opportunity out there. It's you got to figure out what product are you going to be, or what type of a content provider are you going to be, or are you going to be a content provider or whatever else. You just got to figure out what you want. Mm-hmm. And then the assets are there, man. I mean, it's never been easier to build or grow a business than now.
Right. No, that's true. Yeah, it is certainly true. So to switch gears on you a little bit, you got any cool hunts set up for this year or trying to get tags?
No, I'm the over-the-counter machine this year again.
Me too.
I do have some really, really, really cool hunts, you know, that I've been working towards my entire life, but I'm not going to announce them.
Oh.
But I am doing some things this year that I've, in a lot of ways, never thought that I would be able to do, or that I would never thought that I'd be willing to do just from an opportunity of circumstance. So
cool.
How about you? You got anything lined out?
I mean, pretty much over the counter, almost everything. I drew a general tag in Utah for deer. Yeah.
Those general ones, they give you the late extended if you don't kill, don't they?
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
You join that race?
I don't know. I've gone two years in a row and killed both deer, so we'll see. I never had to try that race yet.
I'm 0-2 in Utah, so that's my
problem. But I didn't shoot very big buck. I think you can see that that's my last year. There's big, like not big, but he's like a big 2-point. Well, I guess he's a 3-point.
Gotcha.
But crabby claw in the front. You know, I shoot whatever.
I've been picky this last couple of years, man. Just picky. It's just because you get to the point where that's just what I wanted. I want something different, something better.
I say that to myself. I get out there and I start it that way. And for some reason, I always like my trigger finger just gets itchy. Because what am I going to do? What am I going to do with another 120-inch, 130-inch buck? Like, what am I going to do with it? My house is tiny. I mean, look how much shit I got crammed on one wall behind me. You know, it's like,
I look at it and say, if I'm packing 100 friggin' pounds off the mountain, it better have a rack with it. You know?
Yeah.
No, it's just, I think you just get to the point where sometimes you want more. I mean, there's guys that start out as that's all they're after is the inches. And for me, it's not so much inches. It's more just, I want more of an adventure. I want to hunt more because I can find a 140 to 160 inch buck all day long. You know, I can find them.
Yeah.
But do I have the ability to find that 190 inch buck, you know, or the non-typical? Do I have the time and the energy and the ability to hunt different areas and come off a mountain and find those? And I really haven't proven that to myself that I can do that consistently. I've done it occasionally.
Right.
But I've always been And maybe that's because of the filming and the cameras, is the fact is I've always been, that's, it's good enough. Factor. I'm going to go after him, and I'm super stoked to have it, you know.
So. Yeah, that's always a limiting factor, though.
So it's changing for me a little bit. Yeah. Like I say, last year I just said, screw it. I'm going on a hunt with Riley. I'm going with Remy. I'm going with my brother. I'm going, you know, all these different people that I hunted with. And that's just the way it goes.
Have you come here for over-the-counter archer deer in January?
Arizona?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Generally, just January. January's packed with shows and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the last couple of years, you know, I've had such long-standing relationships with the brands that I work with that, and I've cut out a lot of brands that demanded that type of stuff. I just don't need it. I don't want it. I don't feel comfortable at big shows like ATA or SHOT or Hunt Expo. I don't like the social anxiety that I get. You know, I love people in small doses. Like if I could just be in my little corner and just talk to, you know, but to actually walk in those rooms and just feel your mind wrap around you, that's not for me at all. So I'm going to do a lot more hunts in December, January, February, hopefully.
I mean, always a really good time too. It comes right after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, and there's no shows going on there. I mean, you got to contend with the wife, but she'll let you go.
Is that mule deer and coos or?
Yeah, it's any antler deer.
Yeah,
yeah, a lot of opportunity.
I could go down there and get skunked just as easy as I could go anywhere else and get skunked, I guess.
Yeah. Exactly. A lot nicer weather.
Right? If the hunting sucks, you just go to the lake.
There you go. Go fishing.
There's definitely a lot more things I do. Like I say, you know, hunting, I love to hunt, and I try to get out as much as I can. There's just a lot of things that I like to do otherwise, and so I have to take a look at, I mean, I've got three young kids, and I have to take a look at family vacation and baseball and soccer and dance and all these different events and things that we travel to and do.
Same here.
And I say, okay, you know, I could go on 10 or 12 or 15 hunts a year if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly it's my business, so I probably should, but I don't. I prefer to keep it to that minimum, you know, 4 to 6. Don't burn myself out and just try to pick things that I'm going to enjoy.
Nice. It's a good outlook, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I probably should get a job, but...
Oh, screw that. Work's, work's overrated.
I feel like I have a job, you know, but I did it to myself, and that's what I wanted. I wanted a business, and I wanted something more than just a stinking TV.
Right.
And so that's what I've created, and got to sleep in the bed you made.
Yeah. No, man, you made yourself a pretty nice bed.
Yeah, I get to work in my garage, you know, and get to go have lunch with my buddies whenever I want. I get to go play golf whenever I want, and I just might have to work late nights, you know, early mornings. So,
cool. Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on.
No, thank you. I'm sorry it took so long for me to.
Oh, don't. No worries, man. I get it. I'm glad to see you guys got the podcast up and going.
Yes,
I listened to a couple episodes.
Yeah.
You guys are fairly entertaining.
Yeah. My thing is, I don't know. There's few people. You're really easy to talk to. But like, I don't feel like I'm good enough to just do interviews over the phone with my guests, unless I know them really, really well. So I kind of made it where I wanted to do face-to-face.
Yeah.
And that limits you when you're kind of a homebody and when you know. Your circle of friends is relatively small, so it limits me to basically Remy and my wife and Remy and my wife.
So, yeah. That's all right, man. You'll figure it out. You'll get into it.
For sure.
Yeah, cool.
Appreciate the invite, man. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck this season, and can't wait to see, you know, what you guys turn out.
Yeah, we'll be rolling out we've got 4 episodes finished. We're going to just kind of put the final touches on some of the stuff today with Remy. And then we'll release those to All Access hopefully next week, and then they'll go to the Outdoor Channel, and they'll start to air first week of July on the Outdoor Channel. We've got 13 new episodes coming, but they'll all be released on All Access through our membership first. And then where are we at? Then we'll start to trickle out season 8, which was last year. Those will start to roll out on YouTube. We've got a couple there, but they'll start to roll out on YouTube and Amazon.
Nice.
Try to hit all bases.
There you go. Doing a good job, man. Keep at
Thank
it.
You. Appreciate that.
All right. Take it easy.
All right. See ya.
Hey, guys. Want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Kuzday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.